Good evening, Winnipeg. Good evening, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this evening on our YouTube channel and all of our social media platforms, we say good evening, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve post-game show. Winnipeg Jets entered tonight's game with a depleted lineup. No Mark Scheifele, no Dylan DeMello. That wasn't news. No Paul Stastny, as there was a possibility he was going to play. Turns out he doesn't. A depleted Winnipeg Jets lineup results in a depleted offensive showing, a grand total of 0 goals scored for the Jets. Only 1 goal scored for the Canadians, but that's more than the Jets put up. And as a result, the Habs have a 2-0 series lead, heading back to Montreal for games 3 and 4, Sunday and Monday. With Dave Minuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We welcome you to the Illegal Curve post-game show, talking about what occurred tonight in a uneventful game two between the Jets and the Canadians.
I'm glad you didn't say low event, Drew. I can't take it anymore.
No. Low event is just a nice way of saying bad hockey. You know, that's what low event is. It's a nice way of saying bad hockey. Because you watch good hockey teams, like the... You know,
Vegas, Vegas and Colorado,
Boston and the Islanders, Tampa Bay and Carolina. There's no low event hockey being played there. That's back and forth. That's exciting. That's dynamic hockey. You know, the line after game one was that the Jets needed to find sort of their playoff intensity. I'd say that tonight's game was much more exhibition-like intensity for both teams. Not like the Montreal Canadiens were anything to write home about tonight. They just got a shorthanded goal when the Jets couldn't get anything past Carey Price. And as a result, they lead 2-0 in the series, 1-0 in tonight's final. Gentlemen, good to see you both, first of all. It's going to be a busy next 4 days for the three of us. Tonight, tomorrow morning, Sunday afternoon, or Sunday evening, I guess it'll be by the time postgame starts, and then Monday at a still yet-to-be-determined time. In any event, it is nice to see you fine, gentlemen, on this Friday night.
Boys, with the way Game 1 ended, like, where was the passion in this game? Like, we were talking about it on the postgame show after game one, right? Like, whether or not Scheifele was going to be in the lineup, we thought there might be, you know, a scrap or two. And you know, you got to give Matty Perreault, like, we know Perreault is, you know, a heart and soul type of player. Like, he was throwing his weight around big time. And that was completely an embellishment by Corey Perry. I don't care what anybody says. I think Perry should have also been off there, Dave, and that shouldn't have been a power play for Montreal. Like, I think Corey Perry has been great in this series, and you guys know that I've always been a big Perry fan, but that was a sell job. Like, you look up sell job in the dictionary, you look up hockey embellishment in the dictionary. Like, I'm sorry, like, Perreault didn't really hit him that hard, but give Perreault credit, right? Like, he was going to the net. He was trying to, you know, go up against the big, you know, tough Montreal defenseman, and that's been a big issue in the series, guys, and it was issue for the Toronto Maple Leafs as well, right? Like, tonight for me, it was just too many shots from the outside. Like, how many Jet shots were blocked by their own players, right? Like, we saw it on so many occasions. It looked like, you know, they were dropping like flies out there on both teams. You know, it just seemed like both you know, both teams were just trying to put everything on net, especially in that third period. And yeah, the Jets had a push and they had chances, but you know, there were chances the other way, right? Like, Paul Byron had a chance on a odd man rush. If you remember Nick Suzuki with, you know, about 5 or 6 minutes left in the game, he had a good chance. So, you know, and you expect that when the Jets are pushing, you know, they're going to give up chances the other way, but a very disappointing effort, guys. And we know how hard it is. It's a similar position that the Jets are in now that the Oilers were last round, right? Dave, down 2 games. You're going to have to win 4 or 5. At some point in the series, if you want to come back, you're going to have to win a couple games in a row. So I think, you know, I mean, I thought Nick Ehlers had a strong game. I really liked Christian Vesalainen's game. You know, he deserved to be moved up to that second line, but I just didn't see enough from the Jets tonight, you know, to make me think that they're going to come back in the series. I'm not going to say it's over, but you know, if your season's on the line, and it is, you got to be better than that in a game two, especially at home.
No question. I would agree with most of what you said there, Mr. Ginsberg. I mean, there's just, you know, there was no passion. There was no intensity for the most part. Sure, the Jets, you know, pushed hard in the last, you know, 8 to 10 minutes of the game, as you would expect. You're down 1-0, and sure that they were, you know, they had some good zone time for the Habs in the Habs zone, but you know, too little too late, especially when Carey Price is as dialed in as he is or as he has been as of late, Dave. Plus, the Jets made it easy on him. No traffic in front to speak of. The traffic that was in front, you know, blocked the shots, whether it be the Jets blocking the shots or the Habs blocking the shots. Just too easy for the Habs. You know, the Jets, I don't know if it was a lack of talent on the ice without Scheifele and Stastny. You know, the absence of DeMello, I thought, certainly impacted the Jets in trying to break out of their own zone. You know, obviously that became less of an issue as the game went on because, you know, the Habs just stuck five guys at the red line and said, you know, you're going to have to get through all of us. They didn't forecheck very hard. Just everything about this game was dull, Dave, just dull. And, you know, I think people are upset that they spent a beautiful June night indoors watching that instead of being outside, you know, being able to enjoy the weather.
Oh, it's not too hot. I will say this, at least they didn't have to pay it for that. But it was, I did tweet, and I think it's pulling up some steam here, but like that might have been the most boring playoff hockey game I've watched in my entire life. I just don't even know what I watched. I really don't. I've watched almost every single Winnipeg Jets game that has been played in this city. I think, you know, maybe with the exception of a handful, I've been at the game, at the building for every single game. Mm-hmm. I just, like, I'm watching this other, some of the other playoff series. It's, you know, it's funny. I was thinking about it when we do our Saturday show and we interview people to talk about, you know, what's happening wherever, Minnesota, Vegas, doesn't make a difference. And I jokingly say to them oftentimes, I'll be like, it may as well be the KHL because that's how little we pay attention.
This year in particular.
This year period. So the point I'm trying to make is that when you're actually watching those games, because there's, you know, there's opportunity now and with overtime, you catch more of these hockey games. It is such a wildly, and you could say it's the crowd, but it is such a wildly different game compared to what we are watching right now, that it is incomprehensible to me to call this playoff hockey. I just don't see it. I was texting with you guys, you know, during the game, and I'm not gonna sugarcoat this. You can't like polish this turd as you will. You know, like there was nothing about that game that resonated or felt like it was a playoff game. Like, you know, to Ezzie's point, I mean, this is you're going to go down 2-0. And of course it's always, you know, they say it's not a series until you win a game in your home building or lose or whatever it is, you know, that, so that, this,
yeah, the saying reality for the record that you just butchered is, yeah, it's not a series until you lose a game on home ice. Well, guess what? The Jets just lost two games on home ice.
Anyways, the point is that
fool me once, shame on you, Dave.
Leave the cliches to me, please. Yeah, I have exclusive domain over bad hockey cliches.
Anyway, so the point is, it is beyond understanding how that game just was played. I honestly don't have an answer for it. I was getting messages from other folks in the media who were sending me like sneezing, like snoring gifts because it was a snooze fest. I texted Ezzie and I said, at least if you're not going to score hit, do something to wake the team up because. Like, I get it. It's the playoffs. You're not going to have, you know, 6-5, 7-2 games. It's just not realistic. But at least do something to energize the group. And to me, nobody's doing it. And it's like, you guys get, like I said, I like Jansen Harkins. I like what he was able to do. But he's limited minutes, right? He's playing on the fourth line. Christian Vesalainen, you know, I mean, you're asking a lot of guys who haven't been playing hockey very much of late. Jansen Harkins, I think, is his first game in over a month. So, Just get the energy level up. And nobody did it. None. Like, you know, a little push in the third period. Well, that's great. You know, Neil Pionk making a double pad stack. Kyle Connor, the flyby on the shorthanded goal. I mean, how do you do that? It's the playoffs. And like them, they say one mistake can be the difference in a game. Well, one mistake was the difference in the game.
Well, on that goal, guys, and I guess we might as well get into that goal because it was the only goal that was scored tonight. But I mean, Josh Morrissey has Tyler Toffoli there. And I'm pretty sure originally it kind of looked like maybe it was deflected off of Morrissey's stick, but I'm pretty sure that it was off of Connor's stick. And Connor's got to stay with Arturi Lehkonen there. And we talked about that, you know, after game one, right? Lehkonen is the player who comes in for Jake Evans. And Kelly Rudy mentioned this during the intermission that Lehkonen was second during the season on the Habs on the penalty kill. And I mentioned this, like Lehkonen's one of those kind of sneaky good players, you know, I forget what his single season high is. I want to say, you know, he scored 15 goals one year, maybe a couple of years ago or 3 years ago. I'd have to look it up. But, you know, that's a good player there. But, yeah, Kyle Connor, I don't know why he decides to go over to Toffoli when clearly, like, Morrissey is playing that two-on-one perfectly, right, Dave? If you want to call it a two-on-one, because Connor and Lekkonen were kind of, you know, head-to-head, right? Like, they were kind of going at the same speed. But it was a very weird choice by Connor. And obviously, you know, we're not going to blame the whole game on Connor, but on that goal, it was definitely puzzling what he was doing there. And you know, it was tough for Hellebuyck to make that save because obviously the puck, you know, changes direction. But in addition to that, I mean, you just didn't see enough offense from this team. And, you know, another thing that was talked about on the broadcast is how Dominique Ducharme was perfectly happy, guys, to roll his lines. Like, it's not like he was favoring one line. Like, you know, Drew mentioned this during the Oilers-Jets series. Like, clearly Dreisaitl was playing way too much. And you could probably say the same for McDavid. I forget if it was game one or game two. It was probably game two when Dreisaitl, I think, played 34 minutes or something absolutely ridiculous. Because it was clear if Dreisaitl and McDavid weren't scoring, the Oilers weren't going to win those games. But this Habs team is very different. Like, you're seeing Corey Perry have a real impact in the series. And before the season started, when the Habs acquired Perry, you're thinking he might even be a taxi squad guy. And, you know, he's out there and he's noticeable every night. So you need more offense from Pierre-Luc Dubois. Like, he was throwing his weight around. And, you know, I mentioned Matty Perreault. He led the team in hits with 7. And I think Dubois had 5. But, you know, you need a goal from Pierre-Luc Dubois. You need, you know, a goal from Andrew Kopp or Blake Wheeler. And I'm not saying that, you know, Dubois, Wheeler, and Connor had a bad game. I'm not saying that at all, but I wouldn't say they had a great game either. Well,
Kyle Connor didn't get his first shot on goal until Connor Hellebuyck had been pulled.
Yeah.
You know, and that's inexcusable. I mean, you know, I know you're without Scheifele, and I know it's a huge loss to the Winnipeg Jets, but it's not like Pierre-Luc Dubois is a scrub. I mean, he's played awfully scrub-like at different points in time this season, but he's not just some random player that they plucked out of the stands and put into the starting lineup. Connor needs to generate more. He needs to be a driver tonight. I mean, you know, to only get your first shot on goal that late in the game, and then, of course, to follow to compound the problem by having the poor back check on what turned out to be the game-winning goal, you need more from Kyle Connor tonight. I mean, you know, Blake Wheeler was more noticeable. I didn't think he was fantastic. I mean, Dubois was Dubois. He's exactly what we've come to expect from him. You might see a good rush, and then the rest of the game, he's fairly invisible. You just, you know, look, Mark Scheifele is a great hockey player. There's no question about that. But you need more from your best guys tonight. And those guys needed to take it upon themselves at the start of the game to do more. And they didn't. They really only started to try and generate when it was desperation time, when there was 8 minutes to go in the game. You know, you need to start that generation. You need to start that push when you give up that shorthanded goal. You know, that late power play. They had a power play late when Shea Weber hauls down Nikolai Ehlers in the third period. I mean, that power play was atrocious.
They had one shot on net.
Awful.
Yeah, one shot on the, was, if I recall correctly, was that point shot with no traffic in front.
From Morrissey.
Yeah, it was a point shot with no traffic in front. Well, Carey Price is going to make that save with his eyes closed while juggling and sleeping in a hammock.
Wheeler was in the bumper spot, and then he moved in front of the net when he saw that Morrissey was about to shoot the puck. You're 100% right, Drew. That power play was one of those TSN turning points that wasn't a TSN turning point because they didn't take advantage of it. And I just think, to Dave's point, you know, this game, it seemed like at times in this game, it was so disjointed, right? Like, it just didn't, there wasn't a lot of sustained pressure. And what was really puzzling about it was that the Jets came out really strong. Like, the first 4 or 5 minutes of that game, like, they had the legs, they were dictating the pace of play. Like, everything was there.
Like 5-1, 6-1 for the Jets. Sure. A lot of possession.
Yeah. And you just didn't see that continue throughout the game. And in the third period, they came out strong, and, you know, Pierre-Luc Dubois had a chance that was obviously an easy save for Carey Price, but, you know, they were moving their legs, they were trying to create. And I agree with you, like,
that save by Carey Price off Dubois you just mentioned, Ezzy, that was Dubois' first shot of the game. Again, you can't, if you're playing top line minutes, and I know the Habs are a good defensive team, they're a better defensive team than the Jets, but your top line, two-thirds of your top line can't go 40-plus minutes in the game without registering a shot on goal. They just can't. You need more from those guys, and those guys need to know that they have to deliver more when you're without Scheifele, when you're without Stastny, they need to be the guys who are driving your team to get, you know, to believing in themselves. The Jets just didn't, to me, look like a team that believed, especially after they went down the 1-0 goal on, by Toffoli.
It looked like Montreal looked like a team that was content to sit on that 1-0 lead for the remainder of the game. I mean, 100%. I say that even despite the fact that they had, what, 3 2-on-1s afterward? So they still had their chances, but I just didn't feel like Montreal was in any interest in really pushing the game. They figured, you know what, we'll sit on this 1-0 lead and we'll be fine with that. That's just watching this game. That's what it felt like to me. I didn't think Montreal, like,
that was Diet Coke, by the way, Dave.
Okay, good.
Not Coors Light.
That's okay. But it's a Friday night, as you're good. But no, I'm not often at a loss for words, but I really don't have a lot to say, which isn't good for a show like this. But
yeah, we got an hour left here, Dave. You better turn it up.
I know. I gotta get reset. Maybe we'll talk about my interview with Jeff Mellott, newly signed by the Winnipeg Jets. But I digress. I really don't have a lot.
I'd probably rather talk about that interview than that game that we just watched.
You know what? We could. I mean, it might be an interesting 14 goals, tied for second in the AHL for amongst rookies. If anyone wants to talk about Jeff Mellott,
Jeff Mellott tomorrow on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
That interview will be featured on illegalcurve.com and on our YouTube channel probably this weekend. So, but anyways, back to the Winnipeg Jets and Montreal Canadiens, guys. I don't have a tremendous level of insight right now because I'm sitting here having watched that game like everyone else did, and I'm just trying to figure out what I watched, right? Like I can't figure it out because even the Oilers Jets series without the fans had something. This doesn't. And perhaps it's Montreal doesn't play a particularly exciting brand of hockey, if you want to call it that. And it's not the most riveting to watch. And the Edmonton makes it a little more up and down. And I'm not going to use the word as he doesn't like low event, but I mean, it was
dull.
I really was at a loss thinking to myself with the level of talent dull for sure, but like with the level of talent you still have on the ice, right? You still have guys who can do things. And I was a little surprised, you know, Paul Maurice went to Neil Pionk and Josh Morrissey in the third period. I was a little surprised he didn't blend up. He bumped Christian Vesalainen up onto that second line eventually. And, you know, it's interesting, like Christian Vesalainen just doesn't have a tremendous amount of confidence. That's part of the problem. Like he's got a very good shot and he's kind of deferential. Is he looking for a pass? Then he took a shot when he couldn't get Ehlers with the pass when they were going in on 3-on-2, which probably would have set Ehlers up with a pretty good opportunity. And so, you know, and I don't blame those guys. Like I said, when guys like Jansen Harkins and Christian Vesalainen are getting in the lineup and they're trying to produce, you know, given the limited usage they've had over the course of the season, you don't hold them accountable. Again, it comes down to the guys who are in front, the leaders on the team. And I'm reading the quotes, you know, while Ez was talking, I was reading the quotes about from this team. And look, I mean, I'm not surprised, right? These guys aren't going to say we sucked and we couldn't do anything, we couldn't generate, and it's all over. But you're reading them, and they're like, well, we played good. We just didn't have, you know, we made that one mistake that, you know. But other than that, it was a 0-0 game for the most part. Well, sure. I mean, I guess that's some self-talk that you have to say when you're having, you know, media availability, but I mean, this kind of effort, it's just not going to last. It, you know, a lot of the comments in the chat are saying it's over. I don't think it's over because I don't think Montreal guys, I don't think Montreal's a dynamic team that is instilling, you know, is putting their will on the Winnipeg Jets. So, I mean, obviously the Winnipeg Jets can come back in this. They could use Paul Stastny definitely, and they need these guys. Pierre-Luc Dubois, you got to step up. I mean, I said before the game started, I said this is a huge opportunity for this guy. You know, Nikolai Ehlers, Blake Wheeler, you know, you're the guys who are getting paid. Kyle Connor, to your point, Drew, one shot in 3 minutes left in the third period.
Yeah,
you're making $8 million
the game without a shot.
But you know, you're making $7 million. Like, I'm not going to blame the guys who are making league minimum for not you know, putting the team on their shoulders and carrying them over the finish line. You know, that's the responsibility of the leadership group or the guys who make the big bucks. And so those are the guys who have to do it. Again, anybody can step up and be a hero. Paul Maurice said that 2 days ago, and he's not wrong. You know, you can get a goal from a Trevor Lewis, you can get a goal from a Nate Thompson, You can get a goal from a Jansen Harkins, but it's the leaders that have to lead this Jets team.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome. You're watching, you're listening, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve post-game show. The man giving that soliloquy in the top right is Dave Manuk. I'm your host, Drew Mandel. The man on the bottom of the screen, Big Daddy himself, Ezra Ginsberg. We're talking about the Winnipeg Jets falling by a score of 1-0 to the Montreal Canadiens. They're now down 2-0 in the best of 7 second round series against the Habs. They head to Montreal Sunday, Monday, a back-to-back for both players. Paul Maurice in his post-game media availability saying there's a chance Paul Stastny returns for game 3 on Sunday. The Jets could certainly use him to return to the lineup because the way they are right now, depleted as they are, no Scheifele, no Stastny, no DiBello, they need as many reinforcements as they can get. You know, I thought Paul Maurice with, you know, you have a substantial injection of new blood into the lineup tonight. And I don't like how Paul Maurice deployed the forwards groups to start the game, to be perfectly honest. Jansen Harkins is an energy guy. Jansen Harkins, Dave, you speak the praises of Jansen Harkins all the time. He's a guy who needs, he would be a guy you could plug in higher in the lineup, and he's going to go and he's going to forecheck like a demon. He's going to go contribute like that, and he's going to go to those dirty areas. Matthew Perreault up in the second line there doesn't excite me at that point in time because Christian Vesalainen doesn't really fit with Adam Lowry and Mason Appleton. I would have much rather had seen Harkins with Appleton and Lowry. I would have much rather seen Perreault playing with Thompson and Lewis because they've had success all year long. And then you put a guy like Jansen Harkins, you know, if you want to elevate him, Christian Vesalainen, put him with skilled players, put him in a scoring opportunity. They did that later in the game, but I just thought starting the way they did was, you know, with the forward deployment they chose was just boring by Paul Maurice and not really using anything, not using anything as an exciting opportunity at all.
Am I the only one hearing that right now?
No, I'm hearing that also. I don't know what that is.
Okay.
Is somebody playing a video?
Not me.
I mean, I've been
Dave Manuk.
Just watching a little YouTube there, Dave M.
No, I was trying to scroll through something, and then all of a sudden, I was like, "Oh, ooh, video! Oops, never mind. Keep it rolling."
Anyways, forget about.
I agree with you, Drew, in terms of what you were saying about the Lions, and
we have about as much chemistry as the Winnipeg Jets did.
That's a good one, Dave. But if you check Dave M's text, that's exactly what I texted him, wasn't it, Dave? About Harkins, I said elevate Harkins. Drop down Perreault because my thinking is not only to get the best out of Harkins, Drew, but to get the best out of Perreault. And that's a line we saw all year long. And when the Jets had their most success, and again, we don't have to go back to this, but who were on the bottom two lines? It was Kopp, Lowry, Appleton, and then you had Perreault, Lewis, and Thompson, right? So that made the most would make the most sense to me. And look, when you don't have Scheifele and Stastny, we talked about it, you know, after game one, you knew that Dubois, okay, now he's elevated to your top line center. You know, Kopp's going to move up the middle. You know, Lowry's obviously, you know, going to stay up the middle. You know, Nate Thompson, you're not going to use him on the wing. So really, it was only a question of where are you going to put the new guys in? And we already talked about Christian Vesalainen, right? And Dave is right. Like, you know, he's a guy who's struggled a little bit with his confidence, but obviously, you know, last year towards the end of the season with the Moose, you know, Dave, you know, through covering the team talked about this a lot. He really, after coming over from Europe, like it was just like a new player and, you know, he didn't play a lot this year for the Jets, but when he was in the lineup, you know, he did the most with his opportunity. So he was noticeable. He was good throwing his weight around, a couple shots on net. But you know, when a fourth line is only playing, you know, 7-8 minutes, I mean, it's really tough for a guy like Jansen Harkins to get into the game. And I thought he was okay. And yeah, if Stastny comes back, that's obviously going to be huge, boys. But the big thing is here, Mark Scheifele's not coming back until game 6 if this series goes to game 6. So they're going to have to find a way to generate some more offense from most of these lines. Like, yeah, you're not expecting a lot from the fourth line. Let's be honest here. Like the Jets don't have a fourth line like the Montreal Canadiens, but they have a lot of good players in their top 9. Let's not forget going into these playoffs, you know, everybody was singing the praises about how good the Jets top 12 forwards are, especially the top 9. And that hasn't changed much. Like, yeah, you've got a few players out of the lineup right now, But like, again, it goes back to what I said before. Like, the Habs don't have Jonathan Drouin right now. They don't have Thomas Tatar right now. They're not going to use that for an excuse. They've won five games in a row now. So, you know, Dave makes a lot of good points. You know, you have to start with your veteran players, your highest paid players. And again, we're not necessarily coming down on anybody and saying they had a bad game, but nobody watching that game is going to necessarily pick out one of those players and say, oh, that was an unbelievable performance by Blake Wheeler, or an unbelievable performance by, you know, Kyle Connor. Nick Ehlers, to me, was probably the Jets' most dangerous forward. Like, he was one of the players when he was on the ice.
Game in and game out for exactly. The Jets, basically.
Yeah, and aside from Christian Vesalainen, and aside from, you know, a handful of players, you know, it wasn't a very good performance from the Jets at home in a situation, boys, where you had to win that game. And yeah, I know there's a lot of people that are, you know, watching right now that, you know, think this series is over. It's about as close as being over as you can get. Obviously, if you take game three, it changes the dynamic of the series here. But yeah, they've dug themselves a real big hole here.
Yeah, they have. You know, everything about that was just, like I said, dull. There was not a lot you could build upon. And I'm reading the comments, and to your point, Dave, I know that the Jets players aren't going to come out and shit all over their own performance when you lose 1-0. And I mean, there's a lot on the defensive side that I suppose they would like, and, you know, they didn't give up anything 5-on-5. So that is, you know, something certainly to, you know, put a feather in your cap about if you want, but like the lack of energy, it felt like, you know, it felt like game, you know, 55 of the regular season, way more than anything in the playoffs when you're already down 1-0. You know, I don't know if there was an emotional hangover after how game one ended, but I mean, I'm just shocked, you know, and kudos to the Montreal Canadiens for really not losing control of themselves. You know, Dominic Ducharme, their head coach, gets a lot of credit in my books for keeping his players focused at the task at hand, which was, you know, win the game. Don't do anything where you're going to try and get your own piece of flesh from any of the Jets players for how game one ended or anything like that. It's almost like, you know, both teams flushed that, any emotion that they were going to get off of that. And that was to the advantage of the Habs. They played the prototypical good road game, while the Jets just, again, couldn't generate anything offensively, couldn't generate anything emotionally. When you're not lacking in talent, but when your talent depleted, when you're lower on your talent than you would expect to be or than you usually are, you need some emotion. And there was just no emotion whatsoever to the Jets game tonight. And that, to me, is concerning and something you have to sort of find a way to elevate that emotion. Now you go to Montreal on Sunday and you're going to be playing in front of, you know, 2,500 fans, at least. I don't even know if it's more than 2,500. So maybe you get a little bit of more emotion from the Habs fans and you can build upon that. You know, I'm not saying that the 500 or so fans that were in attendance in Winnipeg are, you know, at fault or anything like that. God forbid, no. Certainly not saying that. But just something the Jets need to sort of channel some emotion that can get their game going, that can get their skating legs going, that can get them, you know, to make Carey Price's life a little bit more difficult than it was tonight. You know, because they got offense in game one. They scored 3 goals in game one. They just didn't get, I don't think that, you know, they barely had 3 high danger chances all game long tonight.
I think when it comes down to, if you guys want to talk about that idea of adversity, okay, you want to say, oh, the Jets have to deal with adversity. You lose Mark Scheifele, Paul Stastny skates, but he's not ready to go. You've lost Dylan DeMello for at least a week. So you know he's not playing games 3 and 4 because he has that soft tissue injury. So you have adversity. Well, what did the Jets have in Calgary in the bubble, or in Edmonton in the bubble against Calgary last year after game one? They had adversity. And what did they do in game two?
They used Jansen Harkins in a different role, and he performed for them.
That's right. And so they gave, and he scored his first playoff goal. And I just think, like, this was that opportunity. This was an opportunity for a Jets team to, we talked about it, you know, band together as a team, get ready to, you know, it's us against the world. You know, Department of Player Safety is screwing us. I'm not saying they're saying that, but, you know, let's say that they can use that sort of mentality. And so, but instead, again, like I said, you had a good start. You outshot them 5-1. There was some buzz. They had some jump in their step. But it just, you know, Montreal started to push back. And again, that's not unexpected. You're going to, you know, see that throughout the course of a game. But we just didn't see, through 60 minutes of hockey, a team like we did last year, where they used that level of adversity that they faced against a team, guys, you're going to tell me Calgary and Montreal are really that significantly different? I mean, obviously, Carey Price is Carey Price, good goaltender, but to the point you guys have made, what did the Jets have in total? 6 high danger chances?
Yeah.
So, I mean, most, it's
not
it's,
enough.
And whatever they were mostly at the end. So, I like I said, to me, this there you can say, oh, they had to deal with adversity. Last year against Calgary, team just the same level of talent, I would suggest, as Montreal for the most part. And you used it to beat them without Scheifele, Laine, and Appleton. Well, you're missing three guys, and you just couldn't really get that going the way you did last year.
And through I 40 wanted to minutes, throw this in. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Drew.
I was going to say as quickly as he threw 40 minutes of tonight's game at 5-on-5, which the vast majority of the game was played at 5-on-5. Yep. The Jets had 2 high danger chances. I mean, that's pretty bad. That's pretty bad. I know you're without Scheifele. I know you're without Stastny. But you still have a lot of talent on that offensive group. You need to find a way to get to generate more high danger chances than that. And I don't know, I don't have necessarily the answer for why that you can't get that. But you need to get more than 2 high danger chances because that's just an inexcusable number for a playoff game through 40 minutes.
Yeah, and it's inexcusable the way they played with essentially their season on the line, right? Like that's the way you have to approach a game in which you're down a game, right? Like you never want to go 2 down in a series. Like that is really tough to come back. Like, and it just obviously gets harder, if you go down 3, but look at the stats. Like, what is it? Something like 68% of the teams that are up 2-0 win the series, right? So the odds just get worse and worse. And obviously, the Jets had an effort. Like there was a push in the third period, but it wasn't enough. And, Dave was saying, we didn't see this, we didn't see that. We didn't see much of anything because there just wasn't a lot going on. And the craziest part is, Jordy Benn comes in for Dylan DeMello and he was pretty solid. Like that, it wasn't Dylan DeMello, not having Dylan DeMello on the lineup. It's in the lineup. It's not like, the Jets were really lacking a shutdown pair tonight. That was not the issue. It's that they weren't generating enough offense. And that to me was my biggest concern going into this series. Was that especially if you're going to have some players out of the lineup, that was the big problem for the Jets when they lost those 7 games in a row and they had that stretch towards the end of the season where they lost 9 out of 10. They were really struggling to score goals. And it was almost like if Scheifele, Wheeler, Ehlers, Connor, if the Jets top 4 weren't putting the puck in the net, it was like, where are we getting that offense? And that was in contrast to earlier in the season when you were getting those goals from Mason Appleton. You were getting goals from Adam Lowry and Andrew Kopp. And I agree with Frank Zappia in the chat. Like, Kopp, Lowry, Appleton was arguably the Jets' best line this year, and you haven't seen it at all in this series. So it makes a lot of sense to go back to that line. Like, there's no reason to go back to the way this game started, the forward lines I'm talking about. There's not obviously a lot you can do with the D pairings guys at this point. Like the only thing that you're maybe going to do is have Morrissey and Pionk play together for the entire game. I just don't see that. Like, and another thing, Derek Forbort had a couple good scoring chances and he all of a sudden looked like Bobby Orr. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it was like, if Derek Forbort is one of your best offensive players in a game, then something's gone really wrong. So, the Jets are going to have to dig deep and find a way to win this game because we know if game 3 they lose, then it's obviously over.
It didn't have anything to do with the defense pairings today. I mean, I think for a while during the game, the Jets had trouble getting out of their own zone. And I mean, and that I guess is to be expected when you're without DeMello because, again, your defense is struggling. You just don't have any really great puck movers. I mean, DeMello makes a great first pass. That is sort of what he's known for. He's known as being able to help get the puck out of your own zone pretty quickly. Look, you don't score 5-on-5. You don't give up a goal 5-on-5. You can't be putting this on the defense by any stretch of the imagination. Connor Hellebuyck was very good tonight. He his numbers were excellent. He made all the saves that he needed to make to keep the Jets in the game when it was 1-0 and not give up that second goal. This is on the best Jets forwards that were in the lineup not performing or not performing early enough to get that goal past Carey Price. This is on Connor and Wheeler. I mean, Dubois certainly is at the top of that list. I mean, another underwhelming performance from him. Ehlers was, had his moments, but I didn't think that he was certainly outstanding tonight. I mean, there was just, if you have to blame a group, you would blame the Jets, you know, highest paid forwards for tonight's result. And that's just, you know, when you're the highest paid forwards, you're likely the highest paid players on the team. And that's the case for the Jets. And that just can't happen. They need to find a way to generate starting Sunday afternoon, late afternoon Sunday in Montreal, if they want to get back in the series.
And that doesn't change. Sorry, Dave, but I'll let you get in here. But like, that doesn't change if Paul Stastny comes back for game three. Right. Like Mark Scheifele going out is terrible. It's huge. And obviously you're probably going to get into that more on tomorrow morning show, but I don't think anybody thought a 4-game suspension was coming. Like, we thought one game, maybe two. And if Scheifele gets 4 games, then Kadri probably should have got 24 for what he did. But again, that's, you know, something else that we'll talk about tomorrow. But you know what I mean, boy? Like, they're going to have to find a way here. You know, Scheifele's not coming back till game 6 at the earliest. And yes, Stastny's going to improve your depth up the middle. And that most likely means, I would imagine that, you know, that means that Kopp goes back to the wing, right? Like, I don't think you're going to move Dubois to the wing. At this point, you need Dubois. And I would like to see Ehlers back with Dubois, but they're going to have to find a way here to create more offensively. And it's not just goals. Like, that's obvious. They didn't score any goals tonight. Carey Price absolutely shut them out. But you're going to have to find, you know, those greasy ways to get goals. And it's not just, you know, putting the puck on net and screening Carey Price and getting tips. Like, look at what Corey Perry did in game one. Like, Perry was willing, and Corey Perry's not a young man anymore. He was willing to basically, you know, risk his life in front of the net with 6'7" Logan Stanley coming at him to get the puck to Eric Staal. Like, those are the types of goals that you're going to have to get. Like, you know, go to the net, like, win some physical battles, win those kind of small area situations, right, Dave? Like, that's the way you're going to have to win some games. You're going to have to win this series. Like, you know, the Jets aren't getting a lot of chances off the rush. Montreal's not going to give you that. Montreal's got a really solid big defense, you know. Yeah. Weber, Sherratt, Edmondson,
they make it painful.
Jeff Petrie, they don't make it easy. You're right.
They make it painful to get to the dirty areas, but, and so be it. That, you know, that's why you need guys who are not perimeter players to get to those areas. And the Jets tonight were a perimeter team. Everything was from the outside when they had anything. That's why you need a guy, you know, who are the guys in the Jets roster tonight that are going to go to those dirty areas that aren't going to be perimeter players? You know, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be
Matty Perreault was trying.
Matty Perreault at this stage in his career just, you know, doesn't have it to be a top six player anymore. You know, that's why you need a shift from a guy like Jansen Harkins, where you can just, you know, go be that Tasmanian devil out there and just see what you can create. You know, playing, you know, Lewis and Thompson and Harkins, you know, the 7 or the 8 minutes you played them, I mean, really all you're playing them for is to give your other lines a break. You're not playing them because you expect them to generate anything, because they just aren't players who are going to generate any offense. You know, there were some times during the course of the year where they'd have nice shifts and they'd maybe, you know, keep it in the opponent's zone for the 45 seconds or whatnot. But any time they scored a goal, everyone was surprised. It was a bonus. And so you're just wasting a guy like Jansen Harkins, you know, in that role tonight. And, you know, Harkins is a guy who's been, you know, champing at the bit to get into some regular game action. You don't think that he would have had a rocket strapped to his ass for the majority of this game, especially playing in a different role? I just think Paul Maurice mishandled the deployment of the roster, certainly to start the game. He got better once he switched Vesalainen and Perreault, but I think at that point in time, it was probably too little too late for the Jets. And I think, I would hope that he's going to go back to the drawing board and try and reconsider his forward group, you know, with or without Paul Stastny for Sunday afternoon's game in Montreal.
Yeah, you know what? I like Harkins with Wheeler, actually. I think that he has that sort of cerebral level to his game that would work well with the Jets captain. And he's such a conscientious player, which is similar to Wheeler. I mean, I'm not saying he's got all the same elements, but there is a similarity, I would suspect, between those two players. And they could probably feed off each other. But right now, what we're seeing, you're not expecting, like I said, fire wagon hockey. You're not expecting the Jets to just suddenly open it up. They've had to adhere to a defensively responsible game. It's not exciting. I mean, I called it the most boring hockey game, you know, I've ever watched. Probably.
It's the classic 1-3-1, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, I know people hate hearing about that. It's another word for trap, if you think about it, right? But that's the way the Canadians are playing. They're basically saying, like, yeah, we're going to put a couple forwards in the neutral zone. Our D are going to be high. and dump the puck in and try to get it from us, right? Like, try to do something. And you're absolutely right, Dave. Like, you have to find different ways to create offense. And if that means, you know, you get the puck down low and you kind of work a cycle, or, you know, you're trying to get it back to your defenseman. And they were activating their D, right, Dave? Like, we talked about Derek Forbort was jumping up into the play. Tucker Poolman was jumping up into the play. Mm-hmm. You're expecting guys like Pionk and, shout out to UND. Like, they're going to have to find ways to create offense. And we do sound like a broken record, but that's what happened towards the end of the season when the Jets were on that losing streak. Just the goals weren't there. And you're watching some of these games and you're thinking, like, with all of the talent on this team and all of the goal scorers that they have on this team, like, why aren't they creating offense? And, you know, that's going to be a big key heading into game three, because it's not like you lost 1-0 and you got goalied. Like, I didn't think they got goalied tonight. Carey Price was solid. But a lot of the, like Craig Simpson on the broadcast said, like, you know, Carey Price, some of those shots, it's like he was sitting on a rocking chair. And I thought that was pretty funny, because, you know, it's almost like Carey Price was like, okay, where do you want me to put this rebound, right? Like, well, there were no rebound chances, Dave.
Ezzy, the craziest, when they tried to get excited on that Forbort shot, and I thought to myself, that was really routine. I mean, he saw it all the way. There was no, like, you know, the one where Forbort dove and he tried, there was a little bit of, you know, I would call it fake enthusiasm. And I was like, seriously? Like, that was not a particularly dangerous attempt. Maybe
they're trying to keep people watching this game, Dave.
I guess I didn't fall asleep. I mean, well, I figured if they showed me Mark Scheifele on his phone one more time, I was going to lose my mind. I thought, how many times do I have to see Mark Scheifele on his phone? Like, we get it. He's on illegalcurve.com. He's checking out the latest Jets news. It makes a lot of sense. Like, I'm not.
Yeah, just leave Mark alone, okay?
Yeah, like leave him to enjoy the place you go to get Jets news. I mean, I understand why he was there as well, but we don't really need to focus on it. I appreciate it, but let's just move past it. So, it just, like I said, it's one of those games that you're just sitting there going, okay, what are the Jets going to do differently? Are they gonna blow up their lines? I mean, sure, okay, you've got Paul Stastny as a possibility. I mean, Paul Maurice has dangled out Paul Stastny as a possibility, and Paul Stastny's been good. Don't get me wrong. I think he's been very good for this Jets team. I'm not maligning his play. But ultimately, like I said, what it comes down to is your big dogs have to be your big dogs. And right now, we're not expecting 7-6 games, but you have to get some 5-on-5 goals. 5-on-5 goals are probably pretty critical to score in a playoff game if you want to win them.
Here's the quote from Paul Maurice in tonight's post game about Paul Stastny, courtesy our buddy Murat Ateş of The Athletic. Quote, "We've got confidence going into the other team's building, and there's a chance we might get Paul Stastny back, which will probably help our group up front." Now, to me, reading between the lines, if Paul Maurice is saying there's a chance we might get Paul Stastny back, that means he thinks that Paul Stastny is likely going to be in the lineup for game three. Because I don't believe that he would be talking about Paul Stastny tonight if he didn't think there was a pretty realistic chance he's going to be in the lineup. Now, I wonder if you inject Paul Maurice with truth serum, if he, not deliberately...
Sodium pentothal.
Sure. Thank you, Ezra. You know, not that he, you know, held Stastny out, but that in the back of his mind, the back-to-back on Sunday, Monday played a factor in maybe holding Stastny out of the lineup tonight just to not re-aggravate any bit of an injury. Now, that's a bit of a risky game to play, going down 2-0. Now, and, you know, not that he would have known that they were going to for sure lose the game or anything, but, you know, that's very risky for, you know, and I'm not saying that he know that that's the truth or anything. That's my suspicion, though, is that he held him out, giving him the extra 48 hours, knowing that you might need him for that you might get him for Sunday, Monday as well.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Stastny skated right today, boys. So, I mean, I think you're right. I think there's a really good chance that he's going to play on Sunday night. And if you think about it, guys, again, going back to what we talked about, yes, the Jets are in a hole here and it looks really bad, but you have a chance to get back into the series. And I think there is an advantage here for the Jets with the two games. First off, you had that in the last series. You're good on the road. You've been good on the road this year. And as far as I'm concerned, you have a huge advantage in goal. I shouldn't say huge advantage. That's maybe a bit of an overstatement with the way Price has played in these playoffs. But Hellebuck has done this already in the playoffs, and he did it a lot during the regular season. Not playing the back-to-backs, but playing a lot of games. That's the point I'm trying to make here. So you know that this isn't going to be a high-event game three. So, again, that might just be my own opinion here. But I think that, you know, if you know, if this follows the same script and you're getting a similar workload in game three, Hellebuck is going to be fine in game four. So if you're able to find a way to win game three, then the entire outlook changes for you. And I realize, guys, that that's pretty obvious here. Whenever you go down two games, like, obviously you have to win game three here. I'm just saying, like, the circumstances, I think, don't it's not like the Jets are at a disadvantage here with the back-to-back games on the road. It's not a home ice advantage, like it used to be, especially if there's 2,500 fans. Yeah, they're going to make a little bit of noise here. But
I think
the
Jets might get some juice from that. I do think they might get,
I actually agree with you, Drew. I think that the Jets will be able to pull a little bit of emotional lift from the Habs fans, you know, going crazy and whatnot. So I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. And again, they're going to be back against the wall, right? It's us against the world. The attitude we thought they were going to employ tonight, perhaps they're going to wait till tomorrow, till Sunday to employ it. But that might not necessarily be a negative. And some folks are saying, well, what about Jets not getting last change? Well, it didn't seem to burn them at Edmonton. Now, the difference, of course, being that Edmonton is a 1-2 trick pony versus Montreal, which employs a much more balanced level, in terms of their usage. But
they also don't have the game breakers that Edmonton has. So, if the Jets get caught out with a bad matchup, it's not like you're going up against McDavid and Draisaitl and you're holding
and
your breath.
And the Jets have been good on the road all year. So it's not, like I said, they've been a very good road team throughout the course of the season. So I don't – look, guys, we're going to come back and we're going to talk about this more tomorrow, but it wasn't as if the Jets got dominated by Montreal. I mean, Montreal capitalized on a bad mistake by the Jets. You know, a number of players – again, it wasn't one guy. Kyle Connor did the flyby, but there were a number of sequences that led up to that opportunity for Tyler Toffoli to give them Montreal the shorthanded goal, which obviously turned out to be the game winner. Kudos to Neil Pionk, by the way, for that two-pad stack to keep the game down.
That
the
was goal. Incredible.
That was incredible. And kudos to Colby Spence, the Allele Curve photographer, because he just sent me some of the pictures from the game, and he sent me the picture of Neil Pionk sliding across the ice to with that two-pad stack to keep it a one-goal game. So those will be on our Instagram page eventually, but
Colby was also out shooting some black bears. He had some nice Insta posts today. I don't know if you saw those. Black bears.
Taking pictures of black bears. He wasn't shooting black bears. He was taking pictures of black bears. That's what I meant. I just want to make sure that that's clear for the audience. Yes, we
it's
do
not,
encourage
It's not everybody. The Trump brothers, Drew. Yes, that's right.
If you have not followed us on Instagram, you should do that. Same handle, Legal Curve. Our photographer, Colby Spence, as Dave mentioned, takes fantastic photos each and every game. So you go right up close and personal. He's right.
And Alex James. Alex James. Yep. He's our other photographer, and he does a lot of our Moose games, but he also shoots some Jets games too.
Exactly right. So be sure to follow us on Instagram as well.
Oh, Colby's I didn't even know that, but Colby's in the chat. He just gave us a thanks.
And follow Colby Spence on Instagram as well.
There you go. True. And of course, he also takes Ezzy's topless photos, so you can enjoy those on Ezzy's Instagram. Let's take a break. When we come back, much more on tonight's game between the Jets and the Habs. We'll look forward to games 3 and 4 on Sunday. We'll preview tomorrow morning's Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Much more to come. You're listening, you're watching, you're chatting with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the Illegal Curve postgame show, to be exact. We're live on YouTube and all of our social media platforms. Friday night, welcome back to the Illegal Curve postgame show. Drew Mandel, Dave Manuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. Reminder, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., the Illegal Curve hockey show. Just when you thought you may have had enough of us, we'll be back at it in, 11 hours time right now. So be sure to tune in for that. It'll be the three of us. Scotty Billick is going to join us. Our good friend Chris Johnson from Sportsnet is going to join us as well. Mark Dumont from the Montreal is going to join us. So we're all about the Jets and the Habs tomorrow morning, starting at 9 a.m. back here on our YouTube channel. And then again, of course, Sunday sort of evening, I guess it'll be a weird time, maybe a 7:30 or so post-game show for Sunday evening. And then again, Monday night, probably around 9:30 p.m., I think, if I recall correctly, as to the start time of game 4 between the Jets and the Habs. In any event, plenty of Illegal Curve broadcasting coming your way. With Dave Manuk, with Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. Going to get Paul Maurice's post-game media availability up and available coming up momentarily, so hang tight for that. Ezzy, what's the message in the Jets dressing room going forward for game 3? I mean,
I don't know. They don't let me in there, so.
You know, I blame myself. I really do blame myself for asking that question.
No, Drew, don't blame yourself that you've been friends with me for a couple of decades. It's not your fault.
That is my fault. That is 100% my fault. I could have ended that a long time ago. I've ended friendships over a lot less than what
you don't choose your friends.
You know, my grandfather, may he rest in peace, had a very good saying is that, you know, when you make a friend or to make a friend, you close one eye to their behavior. And then to keep a friend, you have to close both eyes to their behavior. So this is all, you know, a long way of
saying. If you had three eyes, you would close all three of them as well.
I've been walking around blind in terms of our friendship for the last 2 decades, give or take. But, you know, anyways, not important. Where do the Jets go from here? What's the, you know, Blake, you're Blake Wheeler. You're standing up. You're talking to you're the captain of the team. You're the leader of this group. What are you pointing to? What are you focusing on as you know, the reason to believe going into game three between the Jets and the Habs?
I think if you're the Wheelers and you're the leadership group of this team, you know, Josh Morrissey, Adam Lowry, like you're saying, like all the pressure is on them. And you're saying like win one game and we're back in this series. And I mentioned this before, right? Like that's how you have to be looking at this series, right? Because right now, and you know, you mentioned, you know, the Jets scored the three goals and, you know, obviously one of those was really late in the game. Connor, you know, pulled within one, but like the Jets were looking a lot more fluid in this game, I would say, as opposed to today. I agree with Dave. Like it just looked like it was just generally too passive out there. Like there just wasn't enough to think that there wasn't like a good shift followed by another good shift, followed by another good shift. It was like, you know, a shot from the outside, no rebound. You know, maybe the next shift you got a shot from the point. Maybe it got through. Maybe it didn't. So I think if you're the Jets in that dressing room, especially the guys that are vocal in that dressing room, we obviously know Blake Wheeler is one of those guys. Andrew Kopp is another guy. He's been around. Like, there's enough guys that have been around, you know, this team here that can have an influence and will step up and talk in this dressing room and say like, look at guys, like all we can focus on is one game. You obviously aren't going to start pulling out the, you know, if we lose this game, you know, we're down 3-0 and we know that only four teams in NHL history have come back down 3-0, right, Dave? So I think that's what you have to be talking about. And you have to also be drawing on last series. Like they swept the Edmonton Oilers in a series in which I remember Drew brought this up when we were previewing the series, like almost every single Sportsnet writer and broadcaster took the Oilers. I think Ken Wiebe and Gord Stellick, if I'm not mistaken, there were like two, maybe three guys that picked the Jets. So like the Jets obviously embraced that underdog role in the last series, even though we know the Jets and Oilers were, what were they, separated by 4 or 5 points or something during the regular season. So obviously they weren't a massive underdog, but because of the fact that the Oilers had defeated the Jets 7 times during the regular season, they were a big underdog. So I think if you're the Jets, that's what you're saying to yourself. So you're saying, look at guys, we shut down McDavid and Draisaitl for a couple games. And it wasn't until game three when they finally woke up. And obviously, you know, the Oilers didn't have much going, you know, for the majority of the series. So that's what you're doing. You're trying to rally behind the way you played in the first round. And you're trying to rally for Mark Scheifele. You're trying to do it for Scheifele, one of your best players all year long. And also, I think you're trying to rally around Connor Hellebuck, because I agree, even though, you know, in the first period of game one, you know, maybe he wasn't looking as confident, but since that first period in game one, boys, he's been excellent.
Yeah, look, Connor Hellebuck is, you know, look, if Connor Hellebuck was to have a bad night, that would be an anomaly. That would be an exception. That would be unexpected. So you expect you're going to get the good goaltending. That's never what the Jets are worried about. They're not worried about the goaltending. They're worried about making sure that they can get the offense right now. When you don't get any goals in a game and you don't really get very many chances, and it's a game where you're down 1-0 in a playoff series, you're a little concerned about that lack of finishing, not even the finishing touch, just the lack of possible plays and possible dangerous rushes that are going to turn into goals. Because the number of dangerous rushes that the Jets had in the course of tonight's game were few and far between, Dave Minuk.
Yeah, no, I mean, we've talked about that pretty consistently throughout this program, guys, is that it just doesn't seem like the Jets had anything going. And you know, guys like you'd expect to do that, to be able to kind of generate, isn't Nikolaj Ehlers. And I just didn't see it happening. It just wasn't happening consistently enough, and which is why the game looked the way it did and why the result was the way it was. And you have to adjust, right? You have to evolve. You can't, if your game plan isn't working, you can have the greatest game plan in the history of the world, in the history of hockey, in the history of sports. If it's not working, then you got to adjust. You have to evolve. And it clearly wasn't working against the Montreal Canadiens tonight. So what do? Well, you have to try and adjust. You have to try and blend some things up, get some guys going. And like we were talking about, you know, a guy like Jansen Harkins, who's just eager and raring to go, give him a bigger role. Give him an opportunity. You know, you did last year in the bubble, and it paid off for you. Obviously not in total, but, you know, you can only
overcome. You won a game. He scored the first goal in a game that you won, the only game that you won, and he was one of the most noticeable Jets in the bubble last year all year round. Now, it's been bizarre to me all year why he hasn't, you know, had a chance to become a regular in this lineup, but, you know, look, the number of bizarre decisions that Paul Maurice makes could take up a show in and of itself.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead, Dave.
I was just going to say people are asking about Cole Perfetti, but he's in Latvia, currently in the World Championship semifinals, Team Canada versus the USA. So yeah, he's not available anytime soon.
Yeah, no.
Unless he takes a Concorde to Montreal, I don't think he's going to get there in time.
Yeah, no.
They've got the Learjet ready for cooled up.
Yeah, Cole Perfetti is not an option. I know everybody looks at Cole Caulfield and what he's done. Again, Cole Caulfield played two seasons of U.S. college hockey. He's not 18 years old. I mean, he's 20 years old. It's not the same comparison. I know that Cole Perfetti's got all the talent in the world. And he's got a super bright future, and what the experience he's currently gaining for Team Canada in Latvia will be, you know, immeasurable in the benefit for his long-term career.
But just because he's got
the same name as Cole Caulfield doesn't mean he's going to have the same impact as Cole Caulfield.
He's also not in the same continent as the Jets right now.
Well, and one thing I will say, though, Drew, to the point that you just made, though, about Perfetti, when I had Craig Heisinger, assistant general manager of the Jets, and obviously general manager Moose, on when we did that Moose wrap up, he said that the experience that Cole Perfetti gained advanced him a full year. It was, there's no doubt about it. Again, I wasn't looking at him as an option for the Jets for this playoff season because I don't think you put that kind of pressure on him. I think what he gained was so invaluable playing professional hockey for the Manitoba Moose, and obviously going over to play for Team Canada in a world championship that really doesn't have a ton of focus on it. Is huge for him, so, and for his development. But again, like I said, when you hear guys like Craig Heisinger talk about what it did for him, and because we saw, like, he went from, and again, we don't have to talk about Cole Perfetti too much, but from a player who was a guy who was getting, well, we could, he got all of his points.
It's not like that game was exciting enough to talk about for much
longer. I mean, who doesn't want to talk about the 2020 first round pick for the Winnipeg Jets?
Yeah.
That he was a guy who was getting all his points on the power play. And then all of a sudden, like, a bell went off. And he was going to the hard the places, and he was doing, like, he did this one play against I think it was against Belleville here in Winnipeg, and he took the puck, and Pascal Vincent, the head coach of the Manitoba Moose, like, just isolated it and said, like, that's a man's play, that's a play from a guy who's not afraid to go into dirty areas, which they weren't seeing earlier on. Anyways, that's enough of my soliloquy on Cole Perfetti. I'm gonna get the
he's also one of only four or five players to score a goal in the World Juniors and a World Hockey Championship in the same year. Like, there's only a really small amount of players that have done that. So that's super cool.
There you go. Anyways, Cole Perfetti is not going to be an option for the Winnipeg Jets for game three. This was a very long way of getting to that point. He's not an option for the Winnipeg Jets. But to that question, I mean, could there be any other roster changes? You know, assume Stasny comes back in. Do you see anything else happening? Could Dominic Toninato come in and maybe replace... Well, I don't even know who he would replace necessarily, because it doesn't seem like Thompson or Lewis are going to be out of the lineup at this point.
No.
Could Heinola be an option for the Winnipeg Jets? I mean, you know, people obviously wanted to see him, or were hoping to see him rather than Jordy Benn. Not that Jordy Benn played poorly tonight, but are there any other options, that the Jets could be turning to for tomorrow?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, Drew. Yeah, and... Look at, I mean, Dominic Toninato, you know, he scores that game one goal, right? Like, he was kind of like one of those unexpected heroes, right? Along with Tucker Poolman in game one. And Toninato, Dave can tell you better than I can, you know, like, when he was playing with the Moose and, you know, had a very difficult year in terms of like the COVID-19 list. We've talked about it. We don't have to go through that again, but you know, he didn't play a lot of pro hockey this year, but when he's been given his opportunities, he's produced. So, you know, there's always the chance that he goes in, but you know, I think we all agree Vesalainen was good tonight. So like, are you putting him in for Vesalainen? Somebody's got to come out if Stastny comes back. So I imagine that if Stastny comes back, it would be Harkins that comes out, but then are you going to put Toninato in on the fourth line, and or it's Perogan? Like I would expect you know, Toninato to remain a scratch. And in terms of Hinola, he hasn't played a game in a while, and I don't know, in a game three situation down two games, if you want to put him in that situation, and are you going to play him on his offside? Where does he slot in, right? Like Jordy Benn made a lot of sense, Dave, because we know that he's better on the right side. And when you lose DeMello, you elevate Poolman. And then, you know, we know it's kind of just musical chairs. It's easy musical chairs. So I have no problem. We talked about this, you know, towards the end of the regular season with Ville Heinola. Ville Heinola is more skilled, you know, than a guy like Tucker Poolman or a guy like Logan Stanley. I've liked Stanley's game though. So my long-winded answer, my, you know, long way of saying that is sure, you could always see Ville Heinola in, but I wouldn't, you know, bet money on it.
It would be a surprise to me as well. I mean, I think the Jets, you know, they've tinkered with the lineup, not because they have wanted to, but because they've had, you know, a slew of injuries. And when you have a slew of injuries and a slew of suspensions, as the case may be, tinkering with your lineup is almost what happens by default. So that's sort of where, you know, the Jets have had their issues so far this, you know, through the first two games. And they have game three coming on Sunday. And, you know, you win game three on Sunday with the quick back-to-back. It's an opportunity to really reset this series. Now, they need a better performance than they had tonight. And that starts on Sunday. And you hope that, you know, it starts by also getting a guy like Paul Stastny back into the lineup, the Jets, for the Winnipeg Jets come Sunday's game three. Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice met with the media a short time ago. Let's hear from the Winnipeg Jets bench boss.
1-0 loss in game two.
Yeah, a big improvement for us from the game one. You know, neither team scores an even strength goal, and hard to come by opportunities at either end of the ice. But much, much better than our game one.
We'll go next to Paul Friesen from the Winnipeg Sun. Go ahead, Paul.
Paul, no Scheifele for a bit here, no DeMello. You lose two at home. How big a hill do you guys face here?
Yeah, it's a challenge for sure. We've been a better road team than we've been a home team all year. So we've got some confidence going into the other team's building, and the chance we might get Paul back, which should probably help our group up front.
Go next to Ken Weaver from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Weaver.
Paul, what role did improved patience play for your group and those improvements that you mentioned?
No, I think, you know, relative to game one, it was quite a bit better. We still think we can improve on a few areas in terms of how we move the puck. But in terms of not cheating the play, we gave up three breakaways, I think, in 4 2-on-1s in game one. So had a couple of bobble pucks at the line that that were a problem for us, but other than that, we were much better.
Go back to Ken Weeb for a follow-up. Go ahead, Weaver.
Well, every year is different, but can you draw on the experience of 2019 when you dropped the first two at home to St. Louis and won the next two on the road?
Yeah, I mean, 100%. We feel we've got to make the same kind of improvement in game three, and that's the big one, and that's obviously a critical game for numbers, but also going into back-to-back. So we can make the same kind of improvement game over game, we got a real good chance.
We'll go next to Sean Reynolds from Sportsnet. Go ahead, Sean.
Hey, Paul. You'd said at the beginning of this series, with the goaltenders that are playing in this series, you need to get traffic to the net and take away their eyes. Is your team doing a good enough job of that in this series?
Yeah, it would be an area that we can improve. We're a little off the side. I thought we got better at it as the game went on. So getting then, that's going to be a challenge, right? They got four big bodies back there on the blue line, make it tough to get to the net. That's the place we got to get to.
We'll go next to Mike McIntyre from the Winnipeg Free Press. Go ahead, Mike.
It's Gregor. Paul, Montreal was a pretty dangerous team all year on the penalty kill. Just maybe take us through how you saw the shorthanded goal there. Was it just a bit of confusion, I guess, on your guys' part?
Just the 2-on-2 kind of rush. I think Kyle's behind it. It's not sure he can catch like, and then so he kind of releases them, which helped Josh. and Josh had to come off the shoot lane. And then if Kyle's going over, he's got to come over that puck.
We'll go next to Jeff Hamilton from the Free Press. Go ahead, Jeff.
Well, how do you make life easier in your own end? It seemed like your neutral zone game wasn't getting going because your breakouts weren't there. How do you make it easier in your own end?
We'd like to spend a little less time there. I mean, we're a little slow moving that puck right now, and we'll see if we can improve on that in game three.
Next to Murat Atesh from The Athletic. Go ahead, Murat.
Hi, Paul. Going back to kind of the where does that come from? And also, was today a tale of two games, the one before the goal and the one after it?
I think that's the way a game that's tight is played. They get up one and we push a little bit harder on that and they'll sit back a little bit more so you get a bit more zone time. We really hadn't given up much through that second period till a lot, but there was a face-off at about 3:32 that they put a bunch of pucks in the net, they iced some pucks and got in a little bit of trouble. But it'll be tight like this in game three as well.
I'll go next to Ted Wyman from The Sun. Go ahead, Ted.
Well, we saw this in the bubble last year as well, where you didn't have Scheifele in line and it was hard to get your power play established. How hard is it to do that on the fly when you don't have any practices and you got to bring in new players?
It's a challenge, especially when you lose, you know, those two key pieces on that. And so we'll get a chance to look at it tomorrow here and have a little more time. We'll get a better understanding where Paul's at, so we might be able to really shift some things around.
Final question to Richard Labbé from La Presse. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah, hi. So just to follow up on that, obviously injuries and guys missing time is part of a reality, but down 0-2, are you confident to go into Montreal with maybe some guys still missing and be able to come back from this?
Well, it's a 0-0 5-on-5 game, so there's opportunity there to get better. So that's what's going to need to happen.
Thanks very much, Coach.
There he goes, Winnipeg Jets head coach Paul Maurice addressing the media earlier tonight following the Jets' defeat to the Montreal Canadiens. A 1-0 victory for the Habs. The Jets now trail the best of 7 series, 2-0. Game 3 goes Sunday late afternoon in Montreal, with game 4 coming back on Monday night. Reminder, tomorrow morning, 9 a.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will be live back here on our YouTube channel. Talk about everything that happened through the first 2 games. We'll get
who's going to replay the show.
No, we're not. I don't think we want to talk that much more about tonight's game. We'll maybe look at the 2 games in more of a high-level, sober second thought perspective. We'll give our thoughts about the Scheifele suspension, the 4-game suspension, right number, too high, too low. I suspect we'll have some opinions on that come tomorrow for that. And then much more, of course, Sunday and Monday, post-game shows both nights. Will it be the end of the Winnipeg Jets season on Monday night, or will they continue to scratch and claw and fight and try and get back into the series and get their number one center back in time for game 6? We'll know much more by the time the weekend wraps, and Monday night especially as well. Final thoughts from Dave or Ezzy. Anything you guys want to add to the soliloquy that I'm currently on?
Well, you know, just, you know, touching on what Paul Maurice said there in terms of, you know, what he'll have to do with his lineup if Stastny's available. You know, Stastny was playing center in the Oilers series, right? So if Stastny comes back, I think there's a good chance that Kopp is going to move to the wing. Now, I think what's going to be the most interesting, guys, about, you know, Paul Maurice's lineup decisions is, you know, does he decide to keep Kopp in his top 6, or does he reunite Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton? And I would love to see Kopp, Lowry, and Appleton back together. And I really think that a guy like Christian Vesalainen deserves a shot to stick on that second line. So I was kind of writing down my, you know, projected forward lines here, and I'll give them to you. And I imagine we'll get into it more on Saturday's show.
Tease it. Don't give out. Say that anybody has to tune in.
Well, because it'll change
tomorrow morning. It's only 11 hours from now. It's less than 11 hours from now.
Well, I already gave away the third line, and we know who's going to be. We know 2/3 of the fourth line. So I would like to see Connor Stastny and Wheeler, and I'd like to see Dubois, Ehlers, and Vesalainen. So that's my top 6. And you guys know what Perreault's on the fourth line. So I just gave you my top 12, Drew.
Okay, well, we appreciate you giving that. That'll be a little appetizer for everybody to, you know, sate their need for your opinion throughout the course of the rest of the night. Dave,
it's like when you get the breadsticks at Olive Garden.
Yeah, but you always fill up on the breadsticks, and then you never have enough room left for your main course and your dessert, and then you know your second dinner that you order usually for the ride home. Dave Mnookin, yeah, that's okay, buddy. Anything to wrap up on? Or are you gonna blow your forward lines like Ezzy just did?
No, I'm not. I haven't even seen the show plan for tomorrow, so I don't even know if I need to have forward lines. But anyways,
That's because I haven't made it. I think. Hang on. Here's the show plan. We're going to talk about the playoffs. Can you guys handle that? I don't think there's going to be much more detail.
No, I need a show plan. Anyways, point is,
okay, I'll send you an empty Word document that you never open up. Anyways, how about that?
So I can read it on at 9:30 when we're already well on there. Look, guys, I think this all comes down to is people need to go to illegalcurve.com and watch all the post game interviews, which are now been posted on our website, illegalcurve.com.
And smash the like button.
I will say though, it's funny. Like usually, I try and keep them concise, and I'm like, okay, I'll just keep some point form notable moments that have happened in the game. I think I wrote literally nothing. Like there's nothing. There's nothing of note that I would really have to write. But if you want to hear from Blake Wheeler, Andrew Kopp, Nikolai Ehlers, and obviously you just saw Paul Maurice. We just played that. But you can hear from the players. You can hear what they have to say. We've got Mark Scheifele's full interview, which ran about 15 minutes. So that's on illegalcurve.com. You can watch that. Yeah, it was.
He was talking about his family.
Well, I mean, I didn't want to go off, but I was just like, it's so mind-numbing. We'll talk about it tomorrow, but like, it is so mind-numbing to think. I don't care how much you hate. I think I wrote it in the afternoon links, actually. I said, like, I don't care how much you hate a player. I mean, to have a level of passion to hate someone that much is kind of beyond me anyways. But if you do and you take it to the next level of trying to locate their family and spread that message to their family, I said, you've gone from being a fan to being a lunatic and you need serious help.
How big of a loser are you if you are bugging Mark Scheifele's family?
No, I mean,
it doesn't get any lower than that.
Anyways, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But the point is, if you guys want to, if people want to get prepped for that, you can watch the Mark Scheifele interview in full on illegalcurve.com. And of course, to tease it, my one-on-one exclusive interview with the newly signed Jeff Mallott. So that also will be on illegalcurve.com at some point this weekend.
I think CNN's going to pick it up as well, Dave.
I've heard that. They actually contacted me. They wanted to touch base about that.
It will be a very busy day on the website. It'll be a very busy day for us here on our YouTube channel. You know how to get all of your latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's what we bring to you each and every day and each and every post-game show between illegalcurve.com and here, the Illegal Curve post-game show. We'll be back in about 10 and a half hours with the Illegal Curve hockey show. 9
Have a good sleep, boys.
Yeah, 9 a.m. back here on the program. Before you depart tonight, we kindly ask that you leave us a thumbs up. Smash the like button. You know, tell us all the good things you like about the Illegal Curve post-game show. If you want more post-game talk, Kenny and Rennie, they're live now. If they haven't started, they're going to be.
Yeah, they just started.
There you go. So Kenny and Rennie.
It's Shawnee and Scott.
Sean and Scott, and you're going to hear from Scott as well tomorrow on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. So Scott Billick joins us at about.
Scott does the morning shift with us. Yeah, he does evenings with Kenny and Rennie, and then he does mornings with us.
Yeah. Scott Billick going to join us at 9:30 tomorrow. Chris Johnston from Sportsnet going to join us at around 10:15, and Mark Dumont covers the Montreal Canadiens going to join us at around 11:00. Thanks so much for everybody for joining us. A big thank you to our sponsors: Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty. I see Frank is in the chat and he just offered to bring all of us some pizza tomorrow. So that's very nice of Frank. So, you know, Frank, you just be sure to drop that off.
Is Frank in Winnipeg Beach though right now, or Matlock? Sorry.
I'm not sure. Frank will figure out a way to get us the pizza and he'll deliver it, of course, in a COVID.
Frank will come to us.
COVID proper manner. You know how Frank is good for that. Our friends at Boston Pizza, speaking of pizza, they're also a fine sponsor of the show. And I think we've all earned a nice shot of some Fireball from our friends at Seagram's. So be sure to check them out as well. Until tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. for Dave Mnookin, for Ezra Ginsberg, I am your host, Drew Mandel. We thank you for watching the Illegal Curve post-game show, and we wish you good night and good luck.